Good morning, everybody. My name is Ben Abo, and I am an emergency medicine, wilderness, and EMS physician down in Florida. I should definitely be sitting there, standing there with you in person. Unfortunately, I couldn't get out of California to get into Hawaii because of some COVID testing. I feel terrific. All these other tests are saying negative. The ones that we use for filming TV shows are negative, but I had one that popped positive for specifically coming to Hawaii, and therefore they won't let me get on my flight. So I do look forward to being at the 43rd annual Current Concepts Emergency Care in December 2022. However, for now I'm going to talk to you about non-venomous encounters with wildlife. I have nothing financially to disclose. I do recommend for some extra reading this Wilderness EMS textbook that I wrote the initial chapter for. The second edition is about to come out. That's a lot more in depth and has marine invasions and all too. But I do like how this is set up and isn't too crazy in depth, but enough that you can get a little nerdy about it. Nothing really otherwise to disclose other than I should definitely be there. And I look forward to it next time. So this is REM. That's me in the corner wishing that I was there. But as I mentioned, I have... The reason why I'm talking to you about this topic, other than we hear a lot about envenomation and whatnot, which I did a couple years ago, and then I think Spencer Green also did a venom... Or no, he did another toxin talk 2 years ago. But... So from my experience, I do a lot with TV, filming the TV shows, Kings of Pain, here, and I'm the medical director for Shark Week and National Geographic. I'm filming right now Shark Attack Files and things. I'm on consult for a number of zoos and animal preservation things. That's my way of trying to give back to help people understand and stuff. But it's interesting, especially like this Kings of Pain show, where basically these two guys go around the world getting bitten, stung on purpose. And of course, I get to look at them like they're nuts and save their life and basically dispel medical truths and medical treatments and myths and things like that. A lot of great gifts have come out of it. And memes, so it's been interesting. And for a common question that I get out of all the filming they do for Shark Week the past 6+ years, has anyone ever been bit by a shark while we're filming? No, not by a shark, but other things. But that's what it's all about. For anything wildlife related, honestly, prevention is better than the cure. I actually did have a cover band in residency, 80s rock cover band called The Prevention, because then we were able to say we were better than the cure. So I absolutely love this comic. But, you know, I'm not talking about understanding how to talk down a bear or how to be the bear whisperer or anything like that. But understanding behavior so you know when it's about to happen or when it might happen and try how to deal with it would be very beneficial for you. So according to a number of research articles, meta-analysis, it's about 50% of Americans will require care for animal bites, not human bites, but animal bites, within their lifetime. That's people. That's not number of times, and especially people, you know, me being a Florida manologist, they require care for animal bites even more than that or more than once. But that's a pretty decent number, and so it's very important for us to understand what to do other than just dog bites and cat bites as emergency physicians and PAs and whoever happens to be there. You know, not everything, probably the most encountered that we deal with is we hear about this MRSA spider, but of course it's dog bites and cat bites. This is Otis. This is my assistant medical director who's sitting here with me right now. And I just had to put him in. But Even just yesterday, I got a phone call from one of my dog handlers for the Urban Search and Rescue team, and she had a cat bite, so it had to call in script for her. There are certain things that we need to worry about. We will get into rabies and things like that, but there's certain bacteria that just depends on what's going on that you need to worry about. While this does say otherwise, we do need to just talk about at least a bit of the wound characteristics. When you're dealing with wildlife, there's different things that you potentially are going to see, not just like the cartoons or anything like that, how it's going to look. Your traumatic injuries are going to include things like lacerations and tearing and contusions and scratches, deep punctures, tears, crush injuries, even crushed bone. But overall, what I'm really worried about is, number one, bleeding and flora is much more worse than, say, like the tissue damage and all. Like, my first priority is that bleeding and flora that's in there. And way down the line, I still have to worry about it, but rabies and tetanus, you know, is a lot less. There's some people that are come into my apartment and they're screaming about rabies. And I'm like, can I at least finish tightening this tourniquet? You know, and you really need to balance it out. Of course, they're all priorities that we need to consider things. Of course, then when I'm super concerned about, you know, a raccoon that was acting weird and attacked a woman and she's like, I just want to leave. And I'm like, no, you need the rabies. It gets backed up. These injuries, these traumatic injuries, can occur in any part of the body. There are certain animals that will go for certain other places, like the badgers, which dachshunds, my dog is a badger hound. They're bred initially to fight badgers, and badgers go for legs. Chimpanzees, if they attack, they'll kind of rip your face off, but they'll also go for your genitalia, to rip your penis and your scrotum off. And other animals go for the neck and the jugular, which is also how you kill a circus. You go for the jugular. But here, we actually have, from an accident, an avulsion in front of the neck, and the paramedic was able to just stick an airway right in because he was able to look at without cutting the... Yeah. This is where converting it over to a...
Okay. We're gonna reconstruct this. Okay.
Yeah. That voice there is Dr. Gabe Ruiz, one of my best friends. He was a fellow when I was a resident, all around terrific guy, trauma surgeon. But like I said, it was converted to a trach so that they can reconstruct everything else. Now, rabies is something to worry about, not just globally. It is, we're all familiar with it, right? So it is a virus that attacks the nerves and spreads up. We need to wash it out immediately. We need to know when to do prophylaxis and treat, because if we don't, we have a lot of symptoms. Hypersalivation, which actually is more... It's very painful to swallow your fluids, so that's why it appears that animals are foaming. But you'll have difficulty speaking, some weakness, maybe burning sensation at the wound, tingling, abnormal postures and kind of acting weird, a fever, confused. Different mammals can affect this, and it can become absolutely agonizing. As it gets worse, they become very agitated, no sleep, that salivation, like I mentioned, and seizures. So the best thing to do is try to stay away from wild animals and respect them. And, of course, pet vaccinations. And potentially, depending on your field or where you're going, you might need to be vaccinated. And you might need a post-exposure vaccination as well. In Florida, as an example, you know, this is 2017, a map, and I... didn't mean to have, it looks like I have a couple maps of different years. But you can see, you know, bats and cats and dogs and foxes. It's not too often. We're talking about no more than 5 cases in a county, but that number is growing, right? We don't really have many deaths because of this. However, recently we have had a couple cases. In fact, in the past year, we had two deaths from rabies of humans. One was in Illinois, and that was the first death in 54 years. And another was in Idaho or Iowa. And both of these deaths, and then the ones in Georgia and Florida a few couple of years ago, were all because these people did not get post-exposure prophylaxis. My friends, this is an example of 100% vaccination success. Now, it's not fun. You know, you're getting post-exposure, you're getting the immunoglobulin injected into the wound or wounds, multiple bites. It's a lot of needles and injections. And then you get the vaccine, and then you have to start in day 0, 3, 4, 7, et cetera, like that, as it's set up. But it works. So knowing when to get it, you know, is the dog known? Is the animal, how is it acting? We're going to ask these kinds of questions. Now, the one thing where we're going to be definitely vaccinating is if even a bat was found in the room, even if you don't know if they were bit or there's a scratch or something, we're going to give prophylaxis. Absolutely. One of the people that died a couple years ago was a child, and the father had a box with a hurt bat, and he said to his little child, "Don't touch the bat." But what does the kid do? He touched it, and then so the father didn't even know that he was bit or anything happened, and the kid ended up dying days later. So know the algorithm, know the questions to ask. At least if a dog or wildlife is caught or seen, they could technically, if they're not vaccinated, we don't know, they can be watched for, in Florida, we do 10 days. So you can see, but if you're not sure, they don't have it to keep an eye on it to see, absolutely just do it. It doesn't hurt you, right? It's not a bunch of needles in your arm, but you absolutely should do it. But if it's like, the story is like, well, I don't know, and I had this food, and or the kid got into the dog's domain, right? They're playing. It's usually a nice dog. It's the neighbor's dog, and all of a sudden it went after him. That's a little different than this raccoon that recently came out or this cat that came and attacked this woman that was just sitting there, nowhere near even food, and the cat just kept coming at her. That sounds a lot more like a rabid animal. It's interesting where what you can do and what you can have. We've all watched this, that Tiger King. I've only watched half an episode and I'm kind of done with it. But, you know, it's interesting where, depending on where you live, what animals you can have. Florida, you can have kind of almost anything. But I actually just even was talking with an animal expert, and he has one of these, and we were talking about a case in particular. This is a cassowary. This is the deadliest bird, not because of the bacteria and stuff, but this is about the size of an emu, not as big as an ostrich, and they are beautiful, very, very smart birds, but they are very dangerous. They are very defensive, very aggressive, and they don't fly, obviously, but they do. This is where Jurassic Park, where like birds come from dinosaurs, makes sense. Look at this foot. The females are a lot larger than the males, and they have these 5-inch talons, and they will jump kick you. And in Gainesville, we actually did. I just submitted with some former residents the case where cassowary jump kicked this guy, and it literally cut from like his right clavicle through the ribs, down liver, spleen, and just cut him open through the bone. I mean, that talon just goes through. And it's interesting because their toes don't have knuckles, so it kind of just flays right through and drags once it's in. Does a lot of damage. So this is absolutely, you know, at zoos, it's interesting that they might be provoking it a little bit, but they go in zoos when they have to go into these cages or enclosures with the riot shields because they will just jump kick you. It's crazy. University of Florida. I actually took me a bit to realize how many gators really were around. Versus finding car accidents. I'm not the smartest physician, but I did graduate first in my class. But that's because it was alphabetical order. It's difficult really to know the true incidence of an alligator or crocodile attack. We do have both alligators and crocodiles here in Florida. But it's not as often as you'd think. But the incidence is hard to know because people kind of mess around a little bit and with the smaller ones. But, since the 40s, in terms of alligator attacks and stuff, there's probably only been documented about 400 and somewhere in the 420s, right? There's an article in particular that I quote here, and that's 405 bites since 1948, and that was pulled about 3 years ago. That was 25 fatalities. But the chances of a Florida resident being seriously injured by a gator, an unprovoked attack, you think about how often you see them at golf courses and stuff, is 1 in 3.2 million. I mean, honestly, 1 in 3.2 million chances of a Florida resident being, like, grabbed by Florida. I mean, we've all been seeing the football games. It's not very likely. They don't have a strong defense. Sorry, I had to. So I mentioned a couple of these apparently got out of order, and I apologize for that. But I mentioned these are some of the cases. Since 2006, there have been 28 cases of post-exposure we had to give. Rose confirmed that it was rabies. But the deaths are minimal, right? So you had the two that I mentioned here and then the two recent ones since then. But this was the six-year-old in Orlando, is that child that I was talking about. And the problem was that both of them, like I said, they were both brown bats, but neither of them saw treatment. And you really need to consider prophylaxis, post-exposure prophylaxis. For wild animals overall, the initial treatment is very similar to domestic animals, right? So consider the trauma, the mechanism. I'm sick and tired of people having like this huge swollen leg from a snake bite and them saying it's the trauma. Like snakes don't do that kind of damage like that. But other animals, consider the blunt trauma or the crushing injury. You need to consider like cats, the deep penetrating neuromuscular damage and tissue damage. Wild bites really are no worse other than domestic bites beyond consideration of the actual force. So we do have here, my first night in California was a mountain lion just walking around in the neighborhood, which was kind of scary considering my dog is tiny. And then we had the Florida panther. Understanding your situational awareness, what you're doing with your food and all. But these are mountain lions to cougars to not the ones at the bar. To Florida panthers, they're hunters, they're gatherers. There are not many of them left, unfortunately. Especially here's the Florida panther, their range. We've not had a Florida panther attack in a very long time, but there have been reports, and there is potential, especially for mountain lions and things. So it really depends, and usually it's just because we've kind of provoked them and brought them in. We've desensitized them. But understanding being bigger and keeping an eye on it and then kind of getting out of its way, protecting our small dogs and small children would be definitely helpful. But very strong jaws, very sharp teeth and all. Now, this here is a picture of the Ursus americanus floridanus, which is the Florida black bear. Has some species in the southeast, Mississippi and Alabama, Georgia. But there are other black bears and there are other ones. But in wilderness medicine, we talk a lot about that, basically bears. It's like a black bear, brown bear, grizzly bear, polar bear. Black bear, they say to, act bigger. They're usually, these are the ones that people used to fight. and you act bigger, you make a lot of noise, you put your arms up. More likely to be an encounter with these guys is more likely to be fatal if a bear is wounded, or there's a cub or food or like a carcass nearby. And that's because it's on the defensive, trying to protect it, and that kind of makes sense. Talk about mama bear and stuff. But usually you kind of do what you need to do. Brown bear, they say you're supposed to not make eye contact and stay completely still, even if it attacks you, charges you, attacks you, knocks you to the ground, and just stay still for 45 minutes to an hour because he's going to keep an eye on you and make sure you're really down. Bears are very strong. They can run uphill very well because their back legs being longer than their front legs. They can climb very well. They can get pretty fast, even up to 40 miles an hour. Overall, again, prevention better. You never feed a bear. You need to keep your campsites and things clear and clean. This is a good reason that I try and tell my ex-girlfriend to not keep food in the car, because the windows will be open and they smell and they come through. But you do have to store your food properly. And I'm repetitive and redundant on that slide because it's so important. This is a guy who fought a bear to survive, which was interesting, but we wonder what provoked that bear. Here, this is a small island. This is in Ontario, but you can see how close to the U.S. it was. Before that, there's a in 2005, I think, six, but you know, someone was going out to check on her dogs and never came back and was found dead. And they saw the black bear. This can't happen. This is not here in Florida. You can tell by the snow. But this gentleman was up, and was attacked by a bear. He is alive. He, did survive. You can see it was quite a mauling. But here, he is with a DEA agent friend of mine, and survived. A lot of surgeries, a lot of rehab afterwards, but did do well. Overall, you need to do what you can to stay safe, right? You need to assure that the bear, if you have an encounter with a bear, you need to assure that you're not between it and the exit. You need to, especially the black bear, rather, make noise, bang pots and things to scare it, but you don't turn your back on, play dead, climb a tree, or run. Just make a lot of noise and whatnot. With the other bears, if you can stay out of that situation, you'll be a lot better off. Now, what about non-bears? A common thing that we'll get, interestingly, that scene is parrot injuries, parrot bites. There's psittacosis, that's a chlamydia psitticae, that's a sit affiliated with like the almost a dust, the vapors made from inhaling the poop and stuff. But you can absolutely get it actually from bites and things. And things like cockatiels definitely bite a lot more, but parrots can have some decent injuries. Even their beaks, which can crack open some really tough shells, can even break bones. There was actually a case study written up, and I had a recent one also, but there was a case study that was written a few years ago in 2015. It was an open fracture of the hand just caused by a bite. It's not because he was bitten and fell. This was a bite from it. Very powerful beak, like I said, very sharp too. They know how really to use it as a tool. There's actually been documentation of compartment syndrome in the hand of all things because of bites. There's a decent chart that was broken down in this journal article. And I do agree with it. You know, think about it from the parrot bite. Is it superficial or deeper invasive wound? If it's superficial, I'll throw a lavage. You give them some doxy to cover for the psittacosis. If it's an invasive wound, then they're going to need a real washout, surgical debridement and washout. And we're going to add on augmentin on top of the doxy. So essentially in the emergency department, if I don't have to get too into it, I'm usually just doing doxy. I'm hitting them with Augment and Endoxy if I'm involving anybody else or other consultants. Like I said before, overall, the initial treatment is similar to domestic animals if it's a wild animal, but consider the blunt trauma and the wild bites. Wild bites are not worse than other domestic animal bites beyond the consideration of the force. So, yeah, they are much worse, but that's what you need to consider with it, right? When you have things like this, which is now an invasive species in the Nile monitor and tegu, these absolutely, you know, more wildlife that have extremely sharp teeth, debate how much venom they have and, you know, is it going to bleed even worse or anything like that. A lot of bacteria on it, gator bites, bacteria. And yeah, you know, this is a gentleman, this is a friend of mine who has a lot of wildlife here in Florida. And he got bit really bad with it. He has a video that he talked about it online. They wanted to amputate some of his fingers because these razor sharp sheep teeth. But this was afterwards. I got him to a hand surgeon, and it was super quick. You could even see how the laceration from when the teeth went through the nail and how clean that was. When he called me, I mean, this was an example of, oh, man. And that's even with an animal that doesn't have venom, right? Here's, of course, us doing the TV show, but this is a scorpion fish, and it made him syncopize and passed them out. But even things that don't have a clinically significant or medically significant venom could do some damage. This is a gentleman who was bit by a snake that's not supposed to be venomous, and the trick is that he's not clinically significant, and he went into full anaphylactic shock. Where we had to hit him in the middle of Bolivia with EpiPen. Now, this was him years earlier, so I knew that he was allergic to a lapis because this is his pet black mamba, and that was him bit by a mamba years ago. But here now, we're in the Bolivian jungle, and I got to get him out via boat and plane and all these things with making an epinephrine drip and cut open EpiPens. But this isn't even supposed to be medically significant and was causing quite a rash. Going up ongoing, that would kind of come and go. So topically, I treated it with ABO slurry, which is any kind of steroid cream or ointment, and then I cut open Benadryl pills to make the topical antihistamine. But there are other animals as well in the pet trade. And, you know, things like that. Nick Brandehoff, a great toxicologist out of Denver now, he wrote up a study of a common pet, which is a hognose snake, which is not supposed to be venomous, but if you let that latch on, it does have venom and can cause some damage. Then you have things that are unfortunately in the pet trade, like the slow loris. I don't know why they call it a slow loris. They're very fast, but these cute buggers, because their eyes are very popular unfortunately as pets, but when they get worked up, they put their arms up and they lick this pad under their arm, so it coats their teeth with this toxin. And when they bite, it's not just the bite that hurts, it's actually very, very painful because they've coated the teeth with this venom. You do tend to have a lot of potential with different lizards and all. I was at a hotel in Bali when this guy had gotten into someone's shower. This is a Tokay gecko. This is like a Pokemon in real life, because they say their name. You'll be walking around and you'll just hear a Tokay, Tokay, and they're just saying their name, which is kind of cool. But they have quite a bite force, and there's always potential there for that. No matter where you're at, if you're hiking in Maui, you're going around, you need to consider the different wildlife that's around, not just the obvious ones. You need to worry about, is there something venomous? But also you need to worry about the non-venomous, right? This here is in Bali. This is a reticulated python. This is about 16 feet. And I definitely don't recommend doing that. But at the same time, you could have other wildlife. And you can see here, this is a centipede that really took the guys out. But some people actually have these as pets. which I think is just remarkable. And overall, as I wrap things up, I want to show you this slow motion video from season one of a non-venomous. Particularly the high coming out. The force of the thing just pulling him back. And you absolutely have the force of those powerful jaws. You have the fangs, and that's what I'm talking about, where you need to consider the trauma of what's going on. For him, he lucked out. This is the bottom where you can see the two jaws, two layers, and a large hematoma. And he actually got a tooth through one of the nerves. Overall, it that turned pretty interesting, and your care. I do want to leave you, because I get a lot of questions in terms of with shark bites from Shark Week and stuff. The reality is that shark attacks are very rare. There are some places where they're much more common, but if you understand how they're looking and acting and how you're acting and looking, you can keep yourself safe. There's absolutely more deaths from dogs than sharks. But depending on where you're at, do note that you're in Hawaii right now, so there are some attacks, and the orange number here are attacks, and the red numbers are fatal, are deaths. And where you're at, you know, tiger sharks and some bull sharks and some once in a while great white, but not often. But you should enjoy yourself. Just know how to keep yourself safe. And overall, the big take-home points are that Dana is not just a river in Egypt. Forget status quo, where I learned this. You know, dog, know what antibiotics, but always know your references too. And just know who to call with things. So with that, I'll leave my information up. And again, I apologize that this has to be a one-sided lecture as opposed to a fun-filled discussion. And learning, but I wish you the best.